I'm here with my other two weekly hosts. I believe Derek uses the term lovely.
Sometimes.
We're lovely hosts.
He uses better words a lot, though.
Yes. Yes, he does. Ryan.
I'll take lovely. Hi.
Hi. And Derek.
Yo.
We have a special guest with us tonight, too.
Hi, Eric.
Are you
going
to introduce him?
I am so totally stoked to talk about the totally awesome 80s movies.
Yes. That's our topic. We're talking about the best 80s films. Now, there wasn't too much of a restriction put on us. Just basically, you know, we could be as objective or subjective as we wanted to. These could be Oscar winners. These could be, you know, fan favorites, or they could just be movies that had a huge effect on pop culture, which I feel like I at least have a few of each on my list. So, you know, I expect some good conversation.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Before we dive into everything, Eric, you want to tell a little bit about yourself, what you do?
What I do is incredibly boring.
I think all of us probably.
Okay, so tell us how we know you.
You know me because I am Dalek Dad. Red Dalek's father. I helped build the Red Dalek, and then you guys kind of got me into cosplay groups. Mm-hmm. That got me into more cosplay groups, and I don't know how many cosplay groups we're in now.
Right.
But also, I volunteered for this particular podcast because I'm old enough to have actually gone to the movie theaters and seen these movies.
Hey, at least one of us at the table is also. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ryan, I think that's, you know.
Thanks for bringing that up, Derek.
Just to give you some perspective, the kids that are in Stranger Things, I'm wearing the tube socks right now as we speak.
Nice.
He's owned them since 1984.
My dad wore them way into the 90s. So
those kids would be about my age right now.
True.
So are you Will, or which kid are you?
Let's see. Whichever one was probably the nerdiest, skinniest one out of the group.
I feel like that was Will.
Yeah.
Is that the super scaredy one? The one that's like always in the upside down or whatever?
Yeah.
Is that Will?
That's
him. Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I was rough. When I graduated from high school, I was 135 pounds and the same height I am now.
Wow.
Yeah. 28-inch waist.
I haven't been that thin since I was like 10.
Myself.
So, well, I guess before we get to the meat of tonight's topic,
let's start with the potatoes.
Yeah, let's start with the potatoes. Anyone got some news?
Well, we got our first Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer today.
Yes, we did.
Since we record this on Tuesdays.
How'd you like it?
I loved a lot of it. There were a couple of things I thought were probably a little too gimmicky that I'm worried about. But, like, the shrinking building and the giant Pez dispenser.
God, I don't. They were like, that Thomas the Tank Engine thing, that was great. Let's do that again, only with Hello Kitty.
It actually was great in the first movie. Some of my favorite things from the first movie were the shrinking and, like, using the powers interestingly. Because that's a shrinking character can be a little boring. But you start giving him all these other powers. And that makes it more interesting. And I think that it's cool that they're leaning a little bit on the, you know, shrinking and growing. Although I wonder, that handle on the building, did he build that in? Like, was
it
that
has wheels, too.
Yeah, and wheels. Was that built into the building? It felt like very much like a generic Marvel movie trailer for me, unfortunately.
The trailer didn't get me that excited.
No, me neither.
I'm glad they are addressing the Civil War thing, because there's no reason why he should still be at the raft. Like, he's just still be in jail.
An interesting factoid, though, is the time period that this takes place in, because obviously this movie releases after Infinity War, but everything's good in the movie, so I'm guessing it takes place in between Civil War
Infinity War.
Yeah, this is actually, like, from the Purgatory. It's all shot in Marvel Purgatory. No, so I think that the time frame is interesting. Obviously, Derek has a problem with the time frame from Spider-Man Homecoming, so I feel like that kind of threw a wrench into things, and now they're just like, let's do whatever we want with the timeline.
I'm not going to go out of my way to research timelines for that type of stuff. I'll do that for Star Trek, but I don't do that for anything else. So if you're gonna straight up tell me when something took place inside the movie, not a comic book or an interview, in the movie, then I get to do the math and find out if you're being accurate. Yeah. So don't give me a number if it's going to be inconsistent. You gave me the number, you know?
Don't break your own rules.
Exactly.
It didn't affect the movie at all. Yeah. Anyway.
It's a cinematic universe that folds in on itself sometimes.
Is that what happened? It doesn't exist anymore because they put 8 years later?
No, I said sometimes. CNN, it just sits fine other times. Oh, okay. So it's inconsistent.
Maybe they shrunk into the microverse.
That's right. And they're in the quantum realm.
Yeah, they'll be the Micronauts running around.
I'm good with this.
Shazam started filming. Shazam did. Pre-production ended, and they're officially filming, which means... And they started with a scene from the third act. You can tell by the picture that got posted. Yeah. And so that means that we're probably going to get a costume reveal any day now.
That'd be nice.
It does mean we have now seen as much of Shazam as we have Han Solo.
Yeah.
So, and that movie comes out soon.
We've actually seen... Oh, no. Did they show the little clapper thing for Han Solo?
They did.
Okay. Because
that's where they saw the fake title for the movie. Was it Red Cup?
Sure.
Red Solo Cup.
Oh, God. That's awful.
Yeah.
That's
so
the director did say that he doesn't want... this was months ago that he said he wanted the costume to be revealed officially and not through a photo
of the set. That.
Which we recently saw with Captain Marvel, and a lot of people have mixed feelings about the costume, probably partially due to the fact that they're just photos of the set and not officially released photos. So
I did like in the Captain Marvel costume, she wasn't wearing pumps.
Yeah, she wasn't wearing
heels. No, yeah, it was great.
She had lifted heels and that, but it made sense. They were still flat shoes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The costume didn't bother me. That was another bit of news, I suppose, is Captain Marvel costume reveal.
It's so hard to keep anything a secret anymore, and I kind of don't like that. I miss being surprised when I go to the movies, and that just doesn't happen.
When you see the first poster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Or you go to a movie and you see a trailer for a movie you didn't really know was coming. Do you guys remember what that felt like?
It still happens to me occasionally.
Once in a while. Yeah.
I had no idea that Alpha movie was coming out, and I'm like, the movie about the first doggy? Oh my god. Yeah, totally gonna see that and weep like a little bitch. Like, that's gonna be awesome.
I meant more of like big blockbuster. Like, I remember,
that's never happened.
Right? Like, I remember being in the theater and seeing the first preview for Star Trek First Contact, and it opens up with the Enterprise E just like flying into space. You're like, what the? And it's this, brand new Star Trek movie. Now we're talking about what would be in 4. Or if 4 gets greenlit and 14 or whatever number you want to give it,
So Mel Gibson's trying to come back one more time with a Passion of the Christ sequel.
Really?
That's not a joke.
Christ 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Easter Boogaloo.
I'm sorry, that is for the new Superman show, Smallville 2.
Oh, yeah.
Kryptonian Boogaloo.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
But yeah, Jim Caviezel's coming thing, back too.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's so busy, so...
I thought he was murdered in the last one, just gonna...
Christ?
Have you read the Bible?
Yeah, come on, back.
It's a movie that begs for a sequel.
There's a whole holiday about it.
Yeah. Like, you saw his origin story, and then he comes back with all the powers,
And he starts handing out chocolate bunnies.
Yeah.
I think that's how it goes. Mm-hmm.
I love this.
You gotta walk on water, change water to wine.
They did announce, the Superman version of Gotham, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least Superman, if it's called Metropolis and Clark is in Metropolis, he's gotta be, not 8 years old. So, there's that.
That's true. But, I mean, the Gotham...
They did age him up a bit.
Yeah, he's, 12 or 14 or 15 or somewhere in there. He's like, a teenager at this point.
Yeah, he's just, a decade away from being Batman.
I think he's going to be Batman. He's already got a cowl and a suit, so...
Oh, cute.
Yeah. So, was Batman the first Robin?
He does look like Red Robin. He doesn't have the ears or anything. It's just, a weird,
can
smooth cowl.
Can I just have, a Justice League, but...
Children?
Young Justice? Babies.
Justice Babies?
I love it!
Yes!
I love it!
Can I just have that already?
Sure.
I think that would be wonderful.
I think I'm going to go ahead and greenlight that. So.
Speaking of which, Muppet Babies are returning in March.
Yes.
So they wrote out Skeeter, and they have a new penguin who's going to replace Skeeter.
I'm really glad that there's only two females, and they got rid of one of them.
Is the penguin? Do we know the...
I don't know. I haven't seen a trailer.
We don't want to assume the gender.
Then we would know it was a hen.
Yeah.
Because that would be Gonzo's.
That's true. So will Gonzo have a thing for the penguin, since it's also a bird?
Oh my god.
I don't know. He seems to have a thing.
Don't start drama before the show even starts, Derek.
They're babies. I'm sorry. You're right. It's Muppet babies. In like a hyper-realistic CGI. It's
we
weird.
Need to move on all and right. talk about the 80s already.
When the Muppets were good.
Aww. Awesome. I mean, they're not bad now.
The new TV show is pretty bad.
Well, that's because they're trying to make The Office again. And I'm sorry, you can't recreate Steve Carell's magic.
Not with Kermit, no.
Steve right. Carell's magic was a copy of somebody else.
It was. It's true. But it lasted more than one season.
So why the hell couldn't Kermit do it? Come on.
I don't know.
Than Steve Carell.
Because Jim Henson's dead.
That might have something to do with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. When Jim Henson died, the Muppets kind of...
The soul left yeah. with him. Yeah. That's fair. All right. So yeah, we are talking about the best movies from the 80s. We did have some ground rules, like Ray pointed out. So we're leaving off, like, Star Wars is not part of the conversation because we talk about it all the time.
Along with some other movies that we talk about all the time.
Yeah. Terminator.
We are not discounting how important they are. Every yes. single one of these films is just absolutely incredible. And that's why we still talk about them. That's why we have at least one episode a season dedicated to them. They are huge. They are important. But this is our chance to get to talk about films that we don't usually get to. Mm-hmm. So we're going to briefly just touch on them. Terminator, Aliens, Back to the Future, Ghostbusters. Like, they're all amazing.
Indiana Jones.
They're all amazing. And we adore them. And we're probably going to bring up some of them that we talk about a lot because you can't
help
it.
Yeah, I didn't think Back to the Future was on the list. So yeah, I do have
totally
it written
right.
on my thing.
It's all mine, too.
Okay.
There you go. That's too. Important. It's an important film. So... Well, let's do it. Let's talk about Back to the Future first, since it's on how many people's list?
It was on my backup list.
All right.
It's on our list.
I didn't have a backup list.
I just had somebody else's list.
I just had a really long list. I didn't have a backup list.
It's like 18.
I'm just like, how am I going to decide?
All right, so Back to the Future.
1985.
Directed by Zemeckis.
Which the movie reminds you of when it takes place many times.
Yes.
Time travel movie is kind of important.
It is. No, but it's a classic, right? You've got Michael J. Fox. You've got Christopher Lloyd. Crispin Glover is in the first one. And
hey, well, he's kind of in the second one.
His face is in the second.
His face is in the second one.
And he's in... I think he's in the third one as well.
His face.
His face.
Yeah. Not actually him.
Yeah.
Just the prosthetics to look like him.
Yeah.
So have we talked about that controversy before?
Yes, we have.
Have we talked about Eric Stoltz's controversy?
I don't know about the controversy. Just
well, he
him.
Was fired because he was boring.
He was the original Marty McFly.
Yes.
For those who don't know, who find it hard to picture anybody else, as I do.
And well, and they've actually released some of the footage of it, and it's weird.
It's so weird.
And if you can't think of who Eric Stoltz is, he was
nobody
in the,
can.
Mask.
Mask was his big one.
Yeah. Yes, Mask was his big one.
Who was he in Mask?
He was the villain, right?
Something Wonderful?
Wait, was he the bad guy?
Yeah. No,
he
guys,
was the kid
not
with the
Mask.
Oh.
Mask with Cher, with the G4.
Oh, good lord.
He was the kid with the huge prosthetics.
Yes.
I thought you were talking, you know, smoking.
No.
Maybe not.
All right.
Is it some kind of Wonderful or something Wonderful? 80s?
Exactly.
So this would have been his big break.
Yes.
Well, and it was an 80s movie by good old John Hughes.
Yes.
That he was in. I don't know if I've got him on the list because I don't. Some Kind of Wonderful. That's the one.
Okay.
It was actually a big success in the box office.
I don't know that one.
Also had our Back to the Future mom.
Yeah, Leah Thompson.
Leah Thompson was this co-star in that.
That's cool.
As well.
Okay.
Fun fact about Back to the Future, the time machine was originally a fridge in the early drafts of the script.
That's cool.
How'd they get that to 88?
I don't think it had to go 88 at that time. But a fridge did come back later in cinema as an important piece of...
Because of Indiana Jones?
Yes.
Okay. Well, and you also had the Doritos commercial that used the refrigerator box as a time.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's
kind
cool.
of. There you go. But instead, we got the DeLorean,
which is an iconic. Obviously, DeLorean. you can't think of anything about the DeLorean other than drugs and time machines. So
it's true. It's in Ready Player One, which comes out in March. You'll be able to see.
It's not just a DeLorean; it's the Back to the Future DeLorean in Ready Player One.
You're right, but I think it has a Ghostbuster symbol.
It does, yes, and it has. I think it has some. There's something else about it too that is interesting about it. This is from a different movie, but yeah, it's like kind of a mishmash.
So let's get down to it. Why do you guys love Back to the Future?
The dialogue is wonderful. The characters are great. The story is just really interesting. Like, time travel can become really convoluted and or just be completely useless in a movie, where Back to the Future just, it handles it really well. It goes back and forth between a couple of different time periods. Characters have to play different versions of themselves. Marty has to make out with his mom, which is just a really awkward scene, which is hilarious. It's a hilarious scene.
I feel like if you were Marty and you had to make out with your mom, you wouldn't feel that way.
But I don't have to be Marty, do I?
That's what movies are for. To watch people make out with their mom.
That's exactly what they're past. For. That's right.
Oh my God. No, I pretty much agree on all fronts. I think that for me, I think it might have been my introduction to time travel. I hadn't really like watched a lot of time travel movies before that one. And I was young in the 80s. So that was, I think, the first movie I ever really saw that presented it. And it presented it in a really good, coherent way that I could understand as a young person, you know.
And the comedy in it allowed you to not take it so seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a lot of paradoxes that would be created in the situation.
But they explained it in a way that's easy to understand and made light of it.
And you know, I mean, if Marty went back and came back to 1985 and everything had changed, then the situation where he would have gone to Doc Brown with the time machine and all that likely would have changed if he was in a better economic bracket, things like this. But you don't worry about those things until years later, and then you go, oh, yeah.
But even then, I'll still watch the movie.
It
doesn't bother me.
It's so fun. And, of course, you had Michael J. Fox in there that was a big TV star in at that time. And then Christopher Lloyd, who was also a big TV star.
Mm-hmm. And he was great. The physical comedy from Doc was, I mean, it just his overreactions to everything and his big science words that don't actually mean anything. I mean,
the 80s solidified for me that Christopher Lloyd is a maniac.
Yeah.
Like, between Taxi and Back to the Future and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, he's an insane person.
That's true. I will say, I think my personal favorite Doc moment, though, is from the second movie, where he peels off his face and he's supposed to look a lot younger and he's exactly the same. It makes me laugh every time.
Yeah, it's good.
And of course, in the second movie, you've got a lot better music involved with the story with the Huey Lewis songs that went along with that.
And Derek and Rachel aren't the biggest fans of the second Back to the Future movie.
Well, I don't understand why you have to go to the future to change it. Why can't you change the future in the past
like
you did in the first one?
Well, no, wait. They do. They change the past of the future. It's just the future of the present.
Oh, God.
It all makes sense,
Ray. Come on, Ray.
I understand. I understand there's paradoxes. There was plenty of those in the first movie.
Just enjoy the movie for what it is. Exactly. My God.
But and the fact that they did a lot of fairly accurate predictions of
that's
the
true.
Future
weirdly.
In that movie. Missed the Cubs winning the World Series by one year.
Yeah.
I still want my hoverboard.
Yes, we're all sad about that.
The ones that catch on fire? I'm good.
All right, let's move on. Too much. Okay, so let's talk. Well, I already mentioned it, so let's talk Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Sticking with Christopher Lloyd. So that one's on my
80s?
List.
It is.
For some reason, I was thinking
the 90s, but I mean, it feels more like a 90s movie than it does an 80s movie to me. You know, actually, when making this list, that's an interesting point. I actually feel like the 80s is more of a genre than an era in movies, because there's a lot of movies from, like, maybe 78, 79, and even in, like, the early 90s that still feel like 80s movies. And, you know, there's movies from the 80s, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, that feels more like a 90s movie.
You can say that about a lot of things, because, you know, fashion transcends the border. There's not a clear cutoff.
Yeah, well, I mean, the clear cutoff, obviously, because nobody agrees with me, is 1980 to 1989. Yeah. I mean, but
I think that's a reasonable cutoff for the 80s.
There were movies that I was like, man, that's not an 80s movie? It feels so much like an 80s movie.
And I mean, then, I guess arguments could be made for movies that released in, like, 1990, because they were made in 89.
Yeah.
Right? So they were made in the 80s.
So Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Was on my list. Who Framed Roger Rabbit was on my list. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yes.
I watched this movie at a very young age, because I was born in 87.
Yeah, it's half cartoon. So, of course you're going to watch it at a young age.
But it is a creepy freaking movie.
Yeah, the scene with the steamroller horrified my brothers for their entire childhood, basically.
When Christopher Lloyd, you know, starts tuning out, you know, and his eyes and everything, that is a creepy freaking scene. He's murdering cartoon characters.
Yeah, the shoe
murder. Like,
so sad.
I watched a lot of creepy movies when I was really young. It turns out.
The Brave Little Toaster? Yeah, exactly.
And there's a little, some more adult themes in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, too.
It's true.
I was in my 20s before I found out that guys were, like, pausing it to see if there was animated cooch when she, like, hit the ground out of the car. And I didn't know that was a thing. I had to have guys tell me, oh, yeah, I tried that.
You had to wait for the Blu-ray.
No, 4K.
And it was fairly common for Disney movies in the 70s and 80s to throw in porno scenes, basically. They never dreamed about it being recorded and people watching it at home and being able to slow it down or anything like that. So
they were pretty much bankrupt at that time. Like, they were just trying to get something. So
it was cool premise, though, you know, because the mixture of animation and live action, of course, had already happened several times, right? But
yeah, I mean, they did it earlier with Mary Poppins, so
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Peach Dragon and the
Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
So this wasn't groundbreaking from that standpoint, but it was a totally different kind of movie. It was a very adult-themed movie. It was heavy themes, kind of a lot of violence.
And that's why it was under the Touchstone label.
Mm-hmm.
The separate Touchstone label.
There you go.
Because it was not Disney-type movie. So
It is my probably my favorite Bob Hoskins role.
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah. More than Mario?
Definitely more than Mario. Mario.
What about Hook?
I mean, Smee is great. He is a great Smee, but it's a small role, right? Like, he's not the lead. You know, it's a side character. You know, he's great in it. I wouldn't want anybody else, but you know,
that's totally fair. All right, what's up next?
So who did? I guess we all kind of did Back to the Future. Then, so Eric, do you want to?
Well, one of the big themes throughout most of the big movies of the 80s were comedies and action flicks. Those were the number one.
Action stars were like money in the bank. Yeah.
You have iconic characters like Rocky that
not so iconic.
But Rambo.
Rambo. I was going to skip over Rocky because the first one came out in the 70s, but
now we're only talking Rocky.
Axel Foley.
Conan, any of the Arnold's characters.
Well, Arnold's characters really didn't come out iconic, but the movies did.
Okay.
Mostly because
that's true, I guess.
You know, the Terminator.
The Terminator,
But Conan was 80s?
I feel like it's 80s. It was like 82, I think.
Really?
Yeah, it was early 80s.
It feels older.
And a copycat Beastmaster.
Now, you guys.
How dare you?
Hodo and Dodo, or whatever the fairest names are.
Hodo and Kodo, and Mark Singer is the man. That movie is great. Rip Torn is in that movie.
Apparently, we're breaking up after
Apparently.
I actually, back in the day.
I think he was making a point about a movie.
I'm sorry, we're talking Beastmaster.
We're not talking Beastmaster. Please don't tune out.
When you said you were going to do a review of 80s movies, there were two movies that popped in my head.
Yes.
One of them, I started doing research on those two in particular, and then that, of course, drug me down the rabbit hole of all the other ones I'd forgotten about and all this sort of thing. But one movie in the 80s is ranked number one of all time in its genre. And there's only one movie that hits that mark, and that's Die Hard.
That's on my list.
Die Hard is the number one action movie of all time. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yes. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it is a great it is a great action movie for sure.
Well, it's like I said, it's on many of the lists that you'll find on the internet as the number one.
Oh, I'm sure
action,
for a lot of people, it's their number one
film of all time. Not necessarily my greatest action film, but it was the first one when you said like iconic 80s movies. It's the first one to pop into my head on there. It was
yeah, you get
you had your comedy, which was
you set up seven different sequels or whatever. I mean,
something like that. Yeah,
it turns into a superhero in the sixth movie.
Video games, comic books, and all these sort of things, and of course everybody says it's a Christmas movie. But it's not a themed.
No,
it's not a Christmas themed movie. It's not a Christmas movie. It's got a lot of Christmas elements to it.
Takes place around Christmas.
They say Christmas Eve, but they never say it in the movie.
Yeah,
on there, there is a Christmas party. There are plenty of Christmas items around, but nobody says, "And that's the true meaning of Christmas."
In 2017, it was voted the country's most popular Christmas movie.
Yeah.
That seems a little sad.
I don't know how it beat all the way, honestly.
No, I feel like that's a bit of everybody's, and I mean everybody's. I'm not singling out males and females. I mean everybody's machismo just hitting, like, top level there. We're all just Christmas. We hate it. Let's go kill some German terrorists. Like...
And it also Hans Gruber. Right, it has one of the most iconic villains in movies.
Absolutely.
As Hans Gruber, his very first major motion picture.
Which is
so crazy. Yeah.
At the age of 40, Alan Rickman was successful.
And if you ever watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a popular show now, one of the characters is basically in love with Die Hard. And
they even do a Die Hard-esque episode.
Yeah, it's constantly referencing it. And it's great. It is an iconic pop culture movie, like, has defined a lot of things, including a lot of action movies and a lot of bad sequels.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you feel about the 700 sequel?
But the third one's not terrible because Samuel L. Jackson is in it. It's not awful. But they're all pretty bad.
The one where he throws a cop car into a helicopter, it's like, what just happened? When did he become a superhero?
He goes to Chernobyl in the last one and swims in radioactive water. I think it's a prequel to Unbreakable.
Did he have shoes on, though? Did he have shoes on when he did it?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember.
That's important.
One of the things that a lot of people don't really realize is Die Hard is sort of a sequel. There was a novel written called The Detective.
Hmm.
It was made into a movie starring Frank Sinatra in the lead role, but his name was Joe Leland, like it was in the book.
Interesting.
He was offered the role in Die Hard, supposedly, and turned it down because he was age 73.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the 73-year-old jumping off of Nagatomi?
It would have been like the last Die Hard movie.
There you go.
Seriously. I don't have a problem with Bruce's age because he still looks like he can pull all this stuff off. It's just the movies are getting more and more ridiculous. It's like the Fast and the Furious franchise. They have to keep ramping it up every single time, you know?
All right, Derek.
Something on
something.
My list? All right, so... This is so hard for me.
What about all your sci-fi? All
right, fine. So, if we're going with sci-fi, then...
Come on, Derek, this isn't that hard, buddy.
Fine.
Jeez. We're going to move on to someone else.
Tron.
Let's talk Tron.
Yeah. That was on my list, too.
The original, Tron, mixing CGI with live action, was pretty state-of-the-art at the time.
I fell asleep.
I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, what's funny is it's really not that great of a... Like, if you go back and watch it now, it really isn't that great of a movie. I don't think.
Hold up.
It wasn't that great back then.
I didn't see it in 1982, I think. There was a lot of things I liked about it, but most of it was related to visuals and like, the concept. But the actual movie itself...
Young Jeff Bridges is very attractive.
I think the premise is really interesting.
That's what I said. The premise is interesting.
But that's what makes it a unique film. Like,
but that doesn't make it a good film.
What makes it a bad film?
I mean, it's just the acting is really not that great. The VFX don't hold up anymore, obviously.
Well, but that's different. Like, they were good for the time. And that's how you, when you want to think about the quality of the film, you have to handle the special
effects. I guess we're not saying the movies that hold up today.
You got to understand, you had Star Wars.
Well, sure, but
at the same time, and those effects, while different, didn't come off on the big screen as well as Star Wars did.
That's true, but Star Wars was about practical effects, and Tron was about computer-generated effects. Right. You know, they were supposed to look different. Another movie on my list is The Last Starfighter. Its CGI looks bad, but it was state-of-the-art at the time.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And so at the time, it was unbelievable to see that on the big screen. Now, of course, you look at it, and it's something that you could throw together in any Adobe Cloud, you know, After Effects, right? Right? But back then, that was a big achievement. And the premise was really cool, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're some, you know, kid in a little town with an arcade, and you're training to join, you know, the starfighters, and you know.
And they actually just released a Hulu exclusive show that's pretty much the premise of Last Starfighter, and yeah. References it pretty regularly. It's actually a really good show if you've never seen it. It's called Starman, I think.
Future Man.
I watched it. It's actually really interesting. And it wasn't nearly as bad as the
premise. From Hunger Games.
Fun fact about Tron, everybody thought it was a shoo-in for the Visual Effects Academy Award. It got snubbed because the Academy said that they thought it was cheating using computers.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is a similar thing that they did to the Lego movie. They said that it didn't count as animated because Will Ferrell's in it for 30 seconds.
Yep.
So, you know, the Academy will do what the Academy wants to do.
5 minutes of it with a live action at the very end.
Ooh. It's a good fact, though, because I think that's just an example that it's been, the Oscars have kind of been a political game for a long time.
It always will be.
The 80s Disney movies, with the exception of one.
I think we both
were
had.
Awful.
Yeah.
Tron was slightly better than most.
And it holds a place in pop culture history for sure, but yes. Going back, I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes, it hurts.
Ryan. Yeah.
Okay, so I went with movies, or not all of them, but I went with movies that are a little bit more obscure than the ones that you guys are talking about, because that we don't really get to talk about. Probably the most obscure one that I put on here was The Last Dragon. Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. It was an 80s martial arts movie about a martial arts student, I guess. He's very good. That emulates Bruce Lee and wants to be like Bruce Lee. And his whole quest is to find the glow, which is what apparently martial arts masters get. And Bruce Lee has it. And it makes you glow. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, he meets a woman that runs like a TRL kind of show with music videos and like people dancing and stuff
TRL
like that.
TRL is Total Request Live in the early 2000s.
Yeah, sorry about that. And he saves her from some guys that are trying to blackmail her to put their music video on her show. And there's a Shogun of Harlem who's this really tall black dude that wears like the slotted sunglasses and has like football shoulder pads.
Shonuff.
Yeah, and that's his name, Shonuff. And he makes all his like guys that are dressed in awesome cheesy happening? 80s costumes say his name all the time. And his name, fun fact about this movie, is the main character's name is actually Bruce Leroy. But he's like all about Bruce Lee. He carries a medallion that supposedly Bruce Lee owned. And if you haven't seen it, it's a really, really, it's not a great movie, but it is a really great 80s movie.
What's it called again?
It's called The Last Dragon. They call it sometimes Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Okay. But yes,
isn't there a Bruce Lee movie?
Call The Last Dragon?
Enter the Dragon.
But yes, it's very much like an homage to Bruce Lee movies. The martial arts are not great, and like there's a lot of things that aren't great, but when it all comes together, it really is
a lot of fun.
And the glow, he gets the glow at the end, spoiler alert, and it looks terrible. Whoa. It literally looks like somebody took like a highlighter and went around his character, and he like does a slow-mo moves that make the glow look even worse. Oh, it's really great. Yeah, and Show Enough alone is worth the price of admission. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Check it out if you haven't.
Sorry I missed that one.
Now, in chat,
hey, that was on my list too. Foley, they're ruining it.
Real Foley Genius.
006.
Oh, yeah.
Real Genius.
Real Genius, one of the best Val Kilmer movies to ever come out, in my opinion.
I mean, he's got some other good ones, but...
He does, but I don't think any of them...
I mean,
there's maybe a couple that I could put up there, but Real Genius... Real Genius was just a really great role for him. I mean, it just really worked for him. He got to play this eccentric, kind of prankster in college and that really doesn't care, but he's super genius and gets to design lasers that turn out they're for the U.S. government. And they're going to use them as weapons, and then they use them to blow up a bunch of popcorn in somebody's house, and just
that is the best finale.
Yeah.
Like, how many times have you wanted to do that?
Apparently, there are no birds in that town because there wasn't a single one anywhere near that popcorn.
And he can hammer a 6-inch spike through a board with his penis, or can't. It's questioned whether he can or not, but that's an important part of the movie. And then also, fun fact, he walks in and he hits on the university dean's daughter, and she said she asked him if he can hammer a 6-inch spike through a 2x4 with his penis or something, because that's apparently her requirement for dating somebody.
Small talk.
Yeah. Fun fact about that movie, all the laser technology and everything was actually designed and real functional pieces produced by a professor at Caltech.
That's really neat.
Look that's cool. Up.
That's real. I real didn't know thing. That. Yeah.
So Chap brought up Break-In and Break-In 2 and Electric Boogaloo, the actual movie.
I do actually enjoy anything called Electric Boogaloo.
Just by default.
By default.
I grew up in dance classes since I was like 2 or 3 years old. I've been in dance classes. And those movies have bad plots and bad direction, but it has some of the best dancing in all of cinema history. So say what you want. If you just put it on pause, it's fun to watch. Or mute, it's fun to watch. So
okay.
Do that.
Fair enough.
Rachel, why don't you hit us with another one?
So,
or did we talk about all your
already? Well, we kind of talked about, you brought up how bad Disney was in the 80s. Well, Disney was so bad, they were going to shut down their animation at some point because Black Cauldron flops. The Rescuers was fairly awful. Fox and the Hound didn't do very well. They were just bad movies compared to what we had seen in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So what came and saved everybody was The Little Mermaid. In 1989, The Little Mermaid saved them from bankruptcy. And because of that movie, we now have the animation that we do. You know, if Roger Clements and John Musker hadn't made this film, I don't think Disney would have continued. We wouldn't have gotten the Disney Princess franchise. We wouldn't have had Disney take over just about everything we love at this point.
And it was the herald to the amazing 90s movies. Mm-hmm. I believe one of you mentioned in your 90s review, Beauty and the Beast.
That wasn't me.
Somebody mentioned Beauty and the Beast.
Probably Rachel, I feel like.
No, it was one of the guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't think I did it, but maybe.
I don't think it was you. It might have been Ian.
That sounds yeah. plausible. Yeah. Not confirmed,
Beauty,
but
Beauty
plausible.
Beauty and the Beast, Lion King.
Yeah.
Aladdin
and Pocahontas were the big four that just kept that just kept breaking records, and then they went back into a slump again with Hercules and Hunchback and stuff. So
and The Little Mermaid just barely made it into the '80s. November of 1989, and it was the first theatrical release of a Disney movie after Disney's death.
Yes,
on there. Might be what helped. Don't know. Put some fresh eyes on it. And get something new. And he, of course, had the amazing songs.
Yeah. You know. Great soundtrack.
Yeah. Under the sea. Under the sea.
I've always felt weird about that movie. Because I didn't see it till much later. I didn't get this. For some reason, that my parents just didn't pick that one up.
Were you attracted to the mermaid? Is that the issue?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I don't know. It just didn't work for me. Like, I love Disney movies. I just don't really care for the Little Mermaid.
When you break it down, Ariel is a terrible person.
She's really selfish.
She gives up her entire family for this dude, and
but she gets the guy.
Her entire species, and
she saw him once beforehand.
Exactly.
Come on.
And Ursula pretty much tells her to just use boobs.
Well, that's the big thing. She gets the guy by just not talking at all.
Yeah, it's not the best message.
And as you were saying, you're a little weirded out by it. Try being like a 20-year-old guy going to see it in the theaters by yourself. Okay?
I still go see like Disney movies when they come out now. You know, I just, for some reason, my parents didn't pick that one up for me when I was a kid. I got all the other ones. So
you had all the suggestive kind of things that were in the
movie.
So
suggestive.
And even the original VHS release. How should I put it? The Golden Spire. It's like the gold member edition, we'll say.
Yeah.
Right. I forgot about that one. Yes.
Castle was very phallic.
Yeah. They, and then the later editions basically just kind of zoomed in to take the top of the spire off.
Yeah, cut the head right off. It got circumcised in the later editions.
Yes, it was definitely a male spire.
Okay, Eric, you're up. What do you got?
Well, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Let's do it.
That was on my list.
Next. That was the second movie that popped in my head when you mentioned 80s movies. This movie has everything, including Rooney cleaning up at the kitchen sink. It's got Star Wars music. It's got Wayne Newton music. It's got Beatles music. You've got an actor who will become a captain of the Enterprise in a Star Trek movie. You've got a woman who will become, or an actress who will become Harley Quinn in a future
in TV Birds series.
And The Lion King.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, weird movie. No, it's iconic, right? I mean, if you haven't seen it, you just never had cable at this point, right? Because it's just on TBS, like, every weekend.
Yeah. So. Except Christmas when they play A Christmas Story.
And right.
Every, back to your regular scheduled Ferris Bueller.
Another 80s movie, by the way.
Yes.
But, yeah, the Ferris Bueller is probably the biggest of John Hughes' movies in the 80s. He wrote, I think it was 19 different feature films in the 80s.
Jeez.
And 12 of them were hits.
It's a good decade.
And then 91 comes along and you've got Home Alone, which you guys didn't mention in your 90s review. I don't understand.
Yeah, that. Not one of the best of the 90s. Good.
That little kid's a murderer.
It's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
I want to see him versus Batman and see who wins, because I'm pretty sure he could trap the house. Based on the feats in that movie, he could trap the house enough to take out Batman.
Reddit has a theory that he grows up to be the Jigsaw Killer.
Seems likely.
But Ferris Bueller is on my list. I absolutely adore it. Not so fun fact, Matthew Broderick was dating Jennifer Grey, and the two of them crashed into somebody in Ireland, and they killed that person, so... Not so fun fact.
Yep.
Broke up their relationship.
Simba.
Murder doesn't pull them closer together. I guess it was probably accidental murder.
Yeah.
Way to throw a wet blanket on one of my cherished childhood memories.
It has nothing to do with Ferris Bueller.
I'm so glad I came.
Okay, here's a fun fact. That car at the very end was made out of sugar when they crashed it.
That better have been. Yeah, that car.
They didn't actually destroy.
A sweet landing. I like that.
Yeah, they didn't actually destroy that. It was a sugar.
There you go. Now you're completely neutral on it. You got some good and some bad.
Say Ferris. That's right.
That's an actual band, by the way. They're really good. It's a ska band. You should listen to them.
Of course, it's a ska band.
It's like 14 trumpeteers.
Wow. All right. Great.
Derek, you're up.
All right. Well, so I'm going to stick with Matthew Broderick then, and I'm going with the movie Glory.
It was either that or War Games.
It's not War Games. So Glory, for those who don't know, is a movie actually about the Civil War, about a group of the first volunteer African-Americans to fight in the Civil War for the North. And it had a pretty solid cast. So Matthew Broderick was in it. Denzel Washington was in it. Morgan Freeman was in it. Cary Elwes is in it. Andre Brower from Brooklyn Nine-Nine was in it. Mm-hmm. And even Ethan Phillips, for the Star Trek fans out there, he played Neelix, was also in the movie. So it had a really awesome cast of actors who all became very successful later, for the most part anyway. Some of them winning Academy Awards for other films, especially, you know, of course, Denzel Washington. So really good movie, powerful movie. I actually got to watch that in school in fifth grade.
Yeah.
It's the only time I've seen it in my life, so I don't really remember much about it, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
I didn't even remember Matthew Broderick was in it.
Yeah,
so.
I loved it because we watched that in Gettysburg, right? Those were the two big Civil War movies that you watch in elementary school, and I really enjoyed both of them, so I ended up having my parents get them at one point or another, so...
I don't have very much to say. Right. Like, Glory's great. It's a good film.
Fantastic movie. Was it up for the Academy Award for Best Picture that year?
Did it? Yeah, I know it was nominated.
It didn't win, I don't think.
It was definitely nominated.
I know it didn't win because it wasn't in the list of winners that I looked at. But.
Well, it did win 3 Oscars.
But not Best Picture.
So, Best Actor in a Supporting Role by Denzel. Best Cinematography and Best Sound.
Nice.
So.
Yes, it really boomed in the theater when you saw it in the theater. But you guys were.
No,
sorry.
No.
It was great. The Alamo. Speakers.
The Alamo Draft House should show that one. I'd go see it.
That would... Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. All right, Ryan, your turn.
Rachel would not join you for that, apparently.
No.
Okay, so we hit some of the obscure ones that I wanted to hit. Real Genius isn't that obscure, I guess, but it was on the list. It was one of the obscure ones. So starting to get more into mainstream ones.
Let's do it.
Gremlins. Yes.
That was on my list.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the 11th hour.
So it's... I like Die Hard. It is a movie that takes place around Christmas time.
But Gremlins, man, that's a good Christmas movie.
It's I would say more Christmassy than Die Hard, yeah, but
it's the gift.
Yeah, I mean, the Mogwai is the gift. But beyond that, I mean, other than Christmas decorations, it's not really a huge theme of the movie or anything. But you get great practical effects in that movie.
Yeah, you're a huge fan of puppets and the actual art of puppetry. So, like, how do you feel about all the work that went into that?
I think it was great. I mean, everything was done beautifully. Because of I'm a fan of puppets, I know some things about that movie.
Yeah.
Gizmo was, because he was so small, he was the biggest pain for all the people that had to build him. And so the scene where the other gremlins are throwing darts at him was a scene that the people that made Gizmo made them put in because they wanted to throw darts at one of the robot or one of the gizmos. The whole movie is very dark. Yeah. It's a dark comedy.
That's in the film, though. This was
right,
real.
Yeah, he kept breaking and things like that. So they had, that scene as a thing that they wanted
that's
to
funny.
Do, and they did
Didn't
it.
Didn't they basically have, like, these small little tunnels under everything so that people could...
Pretty much. And, I mean, like, but even the Henson movies, a lot of the Henson movies are like that, too.
Yeah.
One fun fact about that movie, beyond the one I just gave you, Gizmo was actually voiced by Howie Mandel.
Really?
That is a real fact. Look it up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is weird.
Comedian Howie Mandel. Also the host of some game show that I don't remember, Deal or No Deal, I think he's on that. And known like germaphobe that won't like shake anybody's hands or be near people.
Was also on Saint Elsewhere in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Voice gives
Bobby's World.
And he had his Bobby's World, which is pretty much the same voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gremlins is fantastic. It's one of my favorite horror films. As a kid, I really loved the sequel because it's a little more comedy, but as an adult, I much more prefer the
original. These Gremsters are interrupting the Hulkster's show! Yeah, that was a really great sequel. Really great.
Look.
The New Batch. Everybody should check that out for sure.
Like I said, when I was a kid,
because
I liked the gremlin in like the suit with the glasses on the talk show.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was funny, you know.
And the spider gremlin and, you know, all the random...
But now, as an adult, of course, the original is so superior.
Let's just throw Hulk Hogan in this, guys. That's going to make this something that kids want to see.
Yep.
And it worked.
I mean, that's what we still do that with wrestlers. We throw Rock or Bautista in a movie. And
I don't think,
those are legitimate films, though,
right.
Now. Like, they aren't just playing themselves. The Hulk is all
He was playing himself, breaking the old wall of the movie there.
Even in his own movies, he just still played himself.
And he ripped his shirt off. What's the one where he's like an alien that comes to...
That's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, he doesn't play himself in that.
Well,
what was the name of that?
I can't remember.
Oh, my
gosh.
Was
that the one where it was a babysitter, too?
No,
it was
a different
one.
No, this is the one where he like has the PKE meter from Ghostbusters as one of his props that he pulls out. This is from the spaceship. I can't remember what it is. I love
so
that
weird.
Movie, though.
So
anyway,
weird.
Sorry. Not an 80s movie. 90s, I think.
Yes. So chat's got a couple suggestions here. Project X and The Outsiders. I never cared for The Outsiders. I'm just going to say it.
I was forced to read the book at
Me too.
One point. And, you know... Stay golden, pony boy.
What's the other thing that they say all the time? They have some other saying.
I don't know.
I mean, I've seen the movie, I've read the book, I've seen the play. It's not a story for me.
Here's the thing. There are, like, 15 main characters in that. They're all dudes. It didn't catch on with me.
No.
Like, not one chick in that little group. Like, not even one they have a crush on or something that they all objectify. Just... Nope.
Like it.
Yeah.
It's a great literary work and
yes, the book is so much better.
And the movie has got a lot of the teen stars of the time in there, which like almost every movie that throws a bunch of stars in there, it doesn't quite work because they've got to get everybody their screen time.
Mm-hmm.
That's always
it's
tough.
It's not a horrible movie.
Suburban Commando.
Suburban Commando.
That's 1991.
Yes. Look, if it tells you anything, I'd rather watch Suburban Commando than The Outsiders.
I would too. And it actually is a PKE meter that he uses. They just reused it
now,
from the film.
Now, Project X was an excellent movie. Matthew Broderick again. The 80s was definitely his decade. on there. You guys remember that movie at all?
I'm not sure I've seen it. I don't remember.
Basically, the military is using chimpanzees.
Oh, I do remember that. Yes, I did see that.
Jeez, they're training them how to fly planes and simulators, and then they irradiate them to get an idea how long their pilots will be able to survive after a nuclear war to attack the enemy afterwards. And so they're just murdering all these chimpanzees, and Matthew Broderick is one of the handlers, one of the chimpanzees, and he does what he can to break them out.
Good for him.
That rings a bell now. Maybe support I haven't
Broderick.
Seen
it. Quite the tearjerker kind of.
I've seen it, but man, I must have been young when I see it, because like the concept I remember, but I don't remember it well.
No, not at all.
I think it was before Ferris Bueller, but I'm not sure. Hmm. It's right about the same year, the mid-80s, so.
Interesting.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Totally. Who's up next? Is it me? I feel like it's me.
You just did something.
Is it you?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Let's talk the Goonies. Goonies. I love Goonies. Oh my gosh. Derek has never seen the Goonies.
Wow. And that's okay. Not entirely what? Accurate.
That is not okay.
I've seen...
Yeah,
I've
don't lie to him, Rachel.
I've seen
part... Right now, I've got the DVD in my car.
I've seen parts of it. I missed it when I was young, and as an adult, I just don't really see the draw. That's all.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. It's these kids who learn that their houses are being foreclosed on. Their parents have absolutely no way to stop it. They're going to be evicted and thrown out. And so these kids take it upon themselves to chase down an urban legend of One-Eyed Willie, who is an actual pirate. And they believe that he was hoarding treasure somewhere near their homes. Now, they live next to an ocean. They're on kind of this cove, so they can easily get to these. And four small boys and three teenagers, and they get caught up with this gangster family who just broke out of prison. And two of them broke out of prison. And it just ends up being like this really fun kind of Odyssey-like story. And it was very charming. Everything about the heroes is great. They reflect all kinds of kids' personalities. Every single one of them had very cute, endearing flaws, so nobody was portrayed as like this perfect hero. And, you know, even the villains had their comedic moments, and it all works out in the end. There is...
Spoiler alert.
I'm actually surprised that this didn't have a sequel of any kind.
Yeah. Sean Astin still pulls for it all the time.
I know he does. They
have rumored it for decades.
Yeah.
And technically, there was one thing that was kind of the sequel. The Nintendo game.
Yeah.
2.
That's funny.
Yes, which was horrible.
I'm sure.
Just like most sequels in the 80s seem to be.
I think...
Not every
Goonies, but, I think, set up kind of a lot of the things that we're enjoying now in like the 80s renaissance. The like friendship between the young kids really was done in a way that I don't know if it had been done that well before, and kind of set up. I don't think Stranger Things would have been the same way. The new It movie was very reminiscent of the Goonies, the way everything was all kind of set up there. And I'm sure there's other movies.
Like, the 90s was really, really good at portraying kids as kids, and I think that's because I'm going to blame a lot of it on Nickelodeon, because they had so many TV shows. They had reality game shows. They had Are You Afraid of the Dark? They had so many TV shows where kids were the focus and they were acting and could work around. But I honestly believe that most of that was due to the Goonies. Stand By Me, which is also on my list, and we can just go into it now or skip it. But it featured another set of really good child actors that worked really well together, but it was more of a serious film, whereas Goonies is straight up comedy, and it just had a really great cast that worked well together. And you're totally right that the 2000s and the 2010s have sucked with child movies. There's just not a lot out there for kids, but it all started with the 80s, and that's why the 90s was so good, in my opinion.
Cool.
Yeah, Goonies. We should watch it. Okay. It's a lot of fun.
Now, we are getting a little bit close on time here.
No, we're going over, so let's just talk about our movies. You're up.
He's already had his turn.
Oh, you're right. It's your turn. I'm so sorry.
I don't know whose turn it is.
Yeah, I'm glad somebody's keeping track.
I'm so sorry.
I've been torn all day on which ones I want to go. If we're getting close on time.
We're not. It's fine.
Well,
most podcasts run for 90 minutes.
Says the person who doesn't have to edit afterwards tonight when it's late.
You're going to have to do so much editing.
Right. We'll go with...
Dude.
That's the first time my phone has ever gone off in an episode. I apologize.
We're going to go with The Princess Bride. Yes. 1987.
Never seen it. No.
Rob Reiner classic.
Rob Reiner classic with...
Jerry Ellis, Andre the Giant.
All kinds of quotable moments in there.
Yes.
Everybody knows, you know, Indigo Montoya's speech before in there. Inconceivable. As something that actor,
Walsham will never live that down.
He Physic says isn't that his name. He doesn't. He Physic? Can't go into
the character. Vizzini.
Is that what it
is? Yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah, Physic's the giant.
Oh, that's right.
That's Andre the Giant.
You know, the actor can't go into public without somebody saying it to him.
I'm sure. I believe it.
On there, got a lot of that is one of the movies that now you have a lot of stars in it, but they weren't a lot of stars in there, with the exception of Billy Crystal.
Yeah. He gets top billing on a lot of websites for it. He has a 5-minute part.
So. Exactly. And you know, another kind of iconic line, but, you know, good luck storming the castle.
As you wish.
Nice MLT. The mutton's nice and lean. His entire thing is...
That'll take a miracle.
It wasn't Billy Crystal quote. Mine wasn't. But yeah, there's a lot of quotables in that movie. That movie would be... If I had to pick the best movie of the 80s, it would definitely be in the running for me. It's absolutely just perfect pretty much in every way for me.
It's fairly timeless, in my opinion.
Yeah, it doesn't have visual effects that really, like, age. I mean, there's some, I guess, but it's...
There's a couple of moments, but overall...
But the general, it doesn't bog down the movie. No. It doesn't hurt it in any way. Fun fact about The Princess Bride, so it was on my list, and I have fun facts for everything on my list. The six-fingered man actually knocked out Cary Elwes with the butt of the sword because they couldn't get a good take of him faking it, so Cary Elwes... told him, just go for it, man. And he actually knocked him out, and that's the take they used in the movie.
Well, at least they used the take.
Yeah. Well, if you get that, I mean, of course you're going to use that one. Come on.
I'm just saying, you know. Wow, that's hilarious. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. I thought you were going to tell me he actually has six fingers.
No.
No.
That would have been much more boring.
I mean, to that's you, fun. I think it would have been cool.
And then, of course, you have the R-O-U-S's in there.
Which,
you know, you gotta have your monsters in a fairy tale.
So. Rodents of unusual size.
I don't think pigs.
Nobody does, really. And then you had this story with Mandy Patinkin, I think is his name, the actor that played Inigo Montoya, with his father, passed away, and I think it was during the filming or like slightly before the filming. And so he actually was using the movie and filming the movie as a way of coping with his father's death. And so you see the scenes where he's talking about his father. It felt very real because it was very real for him. So
yeah. Fantastic performance.
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it was actually based on a book from a long time ago that pieces of it are lost, and William Goldman put it all back together. But unfortunately, most of the copies have William Goldman's journey of piecing it back together, including after the movie came out and Rob Reiner is telling him, like, your book sucked.
Wow.
Yeah, that Rob Reiner was like, I made this 10 times better.
All right. So chat is suggesting The Right Stuff, which actually was a movie I considered putting on my list. It's about the Mercury 7 astronauts.
You mean it's not about New Kids on the Block?
I thought that was a Weird Al song.
That's what the song is about.
That's the White Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For Oreos.
Oh, yeah. Good, thank you for clearing that up.
You're welcome. Not semen. Not. Okay, talk about the right stuff.
Go ahead, Derek.
No, that's fine. Take your third turn. That's really all I was going to say about it, because it's not on my list, but I considered it for my list. All
right,
excellent, but very long movie.
It is.
Two VHS tapes.
Whoa. Yeah.
And when you give that to like an 8-year-old, be like, here, watch this. It's a task.
No, these things hold 8 hours of content? Why are we doing this?
But I watched it. It's a good movie. It is a little long, though.
The movie got me an A in 8th grade science.
Ooh.
Just for writing a small report about it.
So nice.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Perfect.
So is it my turn now?
Yes.
It seems unclear.
It
okay.
Seems like you've gotten a lot of turns.
I don't know how many turns I've had. This is really...
He actually wrote down every movie from the
80s. Yeah, exactly. He's going alphabetically.
I did not. They're chronological.
Oh, okay.
All right, but I've been jumping around.
Talk about one of the horror films.
All right, fine. So this one's a little tough for me. I'm not sure which one.
I just talked about Gremlins. I mean, that's
true. He did. He did talk about it. I'm just gonna pick one. I'm going to go with The Shining. 1980. I know it's nothing like the book, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be. But it is probably my favorite horror movie if I had to pick one. Jack Nicholson, of course, and creepy stuff happens at the house in the snow. The whole like wall of blood water coming down the hallway I always thought was a bit much. But other than that, I really always enjoyed that movie.
Like Stephen King, I didn't much care for it.
Did you see the TV mini series one that they did? Because I heard,
yeah.
Did you like that one?
I heard he liked that one. Didn't like it either.
Okay, I was just curious because I feel like most people are in one camp or the other. So yeah. I guess you're somewhere in the middle.
I just don't like the story, I guess.
Okay,
there you
just
go.
Didn't work for me. So I'm not a great, big horror fan.
It's a great classic horror movie. If you're a fan of those type of things, yeah. I mean, and Jack Nicholson, one of his iconic roles.
Fun fact.
Hit me with it.
I'm sure most people know this.
I have one about this, too.
I'm sure most people know this. But the Here's Johnny scene with the axe in the door, that was an improv line.
Oh, my fun fact's better.
Let's hear it.
Fun fact, the child had no idea he was in a horror film. The
They hid him from it?
Stanley Kubrick hid him from him the entire time. And his parents didn't show him the movie until he was in his teens. So he had no clue that it was a scary film. And even though she was undergoing some of the worst torture of her life, Jack Nicholson and, oh God, I'm forgetting her name.
Olive oil.
Yeah.
That's definitely her name.
Well.
That's the only other role I really know her from. So.
Shelley Duvall.
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Took me a moment. But
Shelley Duvall.
I was stalling for you.
Who Kubrick hated. But Shelley Duvall, like, they treated the child with nothing but niceness and, you know, he had no clue.
Well, that's good. I mean, you know, don't freak out the kid. You need him. You can't just replace him in the middle of the movie.
That's true. But yeah, not so fun fact. Stanley Kubrick tortured Shelley Duvall and she never wanted to work with him again. It was a horrible experience for her.
That is another thing, too. I probably why I don't like The Shining, the that one. Don't like Kubrick stuff.
I only like that in 2001.
I didn't like 2001. So, like 2010?
I like 2010 is very underrated. Yeah. I like 2010. I bought it by accident on Blu-ray, thinking it was 2001. I just grabbed it off the shelf. But yeah, not as bad as people think. So
Ryan, your turn.
Okay.
How many movies are we doing?
We haven't been through our 5 apiece, so.
We have? Okay.
I'm keeping track. I've made a list of way more than 5.
We've.
So, my next one is Revenge of the Nerds. If you haven't seen it.
I vehemently hate that film.
I do not like that.
You guys don't have to like it.
I liked it.
It was a funny movie. I did not see it in the theaters. I saw it on TBS or something as a young person.
Yes. Could have done without the sequels.
Yeah, could have done without the sequels, but it was one of the films that made me go, okay, maybe being a nerd isn't terrible, because the one chick, dude in the Darth Vader mask hooked up with the hot chick.
Alright, so that is straight up rape. Just gonna say that, going into something, telling a girl that you're her boyfriend and then you're not. That is rape.
Okay, as a child, I didn't really know what rape was. And
he also had real genius on his list. There's pedophilia in that one.
Okay.
A little bit.
Interesting.
Okay. The 80s were a different time, all right? But
yeah, but there wasn't another 16-year-old boy that didn't go, yeah.
In any case, fun fact about Revenge of the Nerds.
There's one.
Booger's monster belch was not actually a human belch. It was partially a human belch, but they mixed it with the sound of a camel having an orgasm.
I'm glad they just had that stock somewhere.
Apparently,
glad there was somebody outside of a zoo just like
for recording it. He's like, this is going to be gold someday.
Fun fact, the Futurama parody of that movie is one of my least favorite Futurama episodes. I just don't like that storyline at all. All
right. Good talk.
Just want you to know that.
Yeah, I don't think it held up well.
I honestly haven't seen it since probably 95, so yeah, I'm just going based off the memory.
I remember watching it again and thinking, I love this.
Well, the doctor from ER is in it. There's a bunch of people in it.
Edwards.
Yeah, they like grew up
George
to be.
In that movie.
You can't talk about Top Gun like that was.
That's
so
true.
It
was
Anthony Edwards movie.
Yeah, I mean, there was actors in that movie that went on to do, you know,
other movies,
other things that we might know them from. I think if I remember right, that movie was actually they had made enough money from Return of the Jedi, the studio had, to where that movie was basically made just as a tax write-off. And so they didn't really care about it, and then it got released and actually made decent money, and they were very surprised by that. But
aren't we all?
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever works.
All right, I've done 3 movies.
How many have you done?
I've done 3.
Okay.
That's I don't know how many I've done. Some of mine were shared, though. Maybe we should just do, like, a lightning round.
Okay. So my last... I had 4 more on my list because I pretty much knew everybody else was going to... have some crossover. So Rob Reiner also did one of my favorite films, Stand By Me. Will Wheaton, River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, and Jerry O'Connell. Coming of age story. It's one of Stephen King's few things that aren't specifically horror. Has a horrible, gross out vomit scene. But, you know, it's when I fell in love with Will Wheaton when I saw this movie. I was like, damn, that kid's a really good actor, and I just want to be his friend and maybe kiss him a little, and you know, that hasn't
and see where
changed.
It takes me.
That hasn't changed at all. Nothing's changed. Will Wheaton's still amazing. Next up is Dead Poets Society. That movie always gets me so many tears. It's set in the 1950s. Robin Williams is this great English professor at an all-boys private school who encourages each and every one of these guys to go after their dreams. And Robert Sean Leonard, who went on to be on House, he plays the main guy who goes after his dream of being an actor, and it ends very poorly for him. It's just a big tearjerker. Tim Burton's first feature film, Beetlejuice.
Also down on my list.
I adore this movie. It's another timeless film for me. Every time I watch it, I feel like it was made yesterday kind of thing, aside from the actors' ages. Everything just looks so great. Practical effects are fun.
It won an Academy Award for V. Neil, I think.
Yeah, for makeup. V. Neil is a fantastic makeup artist, and Tim Burton uses her quite often. She was, you know, on the Hunger Games, and she does amazing stuff.
Fun fact about that movie, Beetlejuice was only in 17.5 minutes of the movie.
Yes.
And the movie was called Beetlejuice.
Yep.
Anyway.
Sometimes the most iconic characters are only in, like, a small thing.
Yeah, the Wicked Witch of Oz wasn't in the whole movie. I don't know if you know.
The Wicked Witch of the West is only in 12 minutes of it. Briar Rose in Sleeping Beauty. Princess Aurora, the main character, is only in 16 minutes of the film. So, you know, it happens. But Beetlejuice has profoundly affected me, and I think it's my favorite Tim Burton film. I don't know. Maybe I'll just have to watch all the good ones from the beginning.
Stop at 1999 or whatever. whenever they started going downhill.
I will not watch Planet of the Apes again.
There you go.
I will not make that mistake again.
Does Nightmare Before Christmas count as a Tim Burton film?
Because he produced it.
He wrote it. He helped design it. He was on set the entire time. Like, every single day.
And it clearly looks like his stuff.
That's kind of like
the black and white stripe stuff.
But. So that would be my favorite Tim Burton movie.
Henry Selick stuff, who he directed, he also did James and the Giant Peach and Coraline. They are also stop motion, but they look more like Henry Selick and less like Tim Burton, in my opinion. And then lastly, because it affected me, like I said, dance movies. Dirty Dancing was huge for me. And even if you don't like it, to deny its pop culture influence is just being ignorant. It's incredibly influential. as just a
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Nobody.
I've seen that movie a dozen times. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Whether you wanted to or not.
Well, it was on. It was kind of like Ferris Bueller, where it was on a lot when I was growing up. And we watched a lot of TV growing up.
And like Ferris Bueller, you got Jennifer Grey's old nose.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen the He-Man version of that. Just kidding, I have seen that. But the He-Man version was better, in my opinion.
You're not wrong.
Neil Patrick Harris does a fun parody kind of scene of Dirty Dancing and How I Met Your Mother as Barney Stinson. It's really well done. They did a really good job putting him into the scene, so it's a good one.
Okay, lightning round, some of your favorites.
Right, the rest of my shortened list was E.T., the Extraterrestrial.
That was one I wanted to put on mine as well.
On there. It I don't think it holds up as well as it used to.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, cell phones and things along that lines, things seem, and as well connected as everyone is, and the fact that parents don't let their kids out of their houses anymore.
How do you feel about them swapping out the guns for walkie-talkies?
They put that back in the Blu-ray release.
Did they?
Spielberg calls it one of his biggest regrets. Was making the change in the DVD re-release.
Well, because now cops point their guns at kids all the time. So.
Yeah. He was trying to make it more kid-friendly, and he regretted it. So when the Blu-rays came out, he reverted it back to the way that it was.
And then, next, First Blood. First Rambo movie.
Oh!
An actual Rambo movie with a story, not just about blowing stuff up.
Yes.
Although there was a lot of that.
There was plenty, but it's mainly in the final scenes of the movie.
Like the sequel, Hot Shots.
No, that's Hot Shots Part 2 is the parody of Rambo. Hot Shots is a parody of Top Gun.
Oh yeah,
and Platoon.
That's true. I actually forgot about that. That's really, yeah, that's funny.
I know
those are really good movies. Actually, I really like the Hot Shots movies.
Before Charlie Sheen went crazy.
I've seen it, but not in a while.
I've got it upstairs. I'm just saying.
We're not watching it tonight.
There is an excellent. Excellent progression of how Rambo kind of becomes the badass that he becomes in the later movies in that. But he's a broken, lost man in the beginning. He's very defeated. He doesn't want to give in to the police officer, but he's also very complacent when he arrests him.
Mm-hmm.
Up until the point where they start abusing him in the jail and he breaks out.
No, because he doesn't really want to be violent when the movie is getting going.
It's once the Vietnam flashbacks start kicking in, things like that, that he's got to get out of there. Got to get out of the situation. It's not until the end of the movie, when he finally sees the old colonel, that he finally kind of has that anchor, and he starts to cry over the whole situation. And there, he's a lot more vulnerable than you ever see him in the other movies and that.
That's true.
And it's a lot better picture than a lot of people give it credit for because of the sequels where you just have the roid rage Rambo out blowing stuff up.
People never really give Stallone the credit that he should have been due back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between the first Rocky and First Blood. I mean, he was a good actor.
And writer,
absolutely. And, you know, now we just remember him as, you know, Rocky IV. You know? But, First Blood's a good one. That one totally dropped off my radar. That's a good pick.
And the last one, we're going to go with your more obscure, Romancing the Stone.
I love that
film. Me too.
I love it so much. And wow. I love the sequel.
I'm glad that, that you'd actually say you love the sequel.
What
the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah, he was with you right up until you said that.
You heard of it?
Like the combination of Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner.
Yes.
They go really well
together. They did. There was an excellent pairing in there. You had the comedy, you had the action, a little bit of Indiana Jones, a little bit of it led to a lot to like the Three Amigos kind of spun off of that as well. And it was an excellent romantic comedy, action adventure.
We need everything. More of those.
They're hard to write.
That's true. Good chemistry is hard to create in those kind of situations too.
Yeah. But Jewel and Niall sucked. Okay.
Look, it was not a good movie. It was not a good movie.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't a good idea, is what it was.
All right.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
Lightning round.
Okay. Going back to John Hughes' Breakfast Club.
Yes.
I was on my list. Movie. Breakfast Club's on my list.
Fun fact about that, Ally Sheedy doesn't speak for the first 33 minutes of the film.
Huh. Nope. Yeah.
That was the best part of the film, as far as I'm concerned. Sorry.
RoboCop.
I love John Hughes movies, but not
RoboCop.
RoboCop.
How did I miss RoboCop?
RoboCop was actually pitched to Stanley as a comic book, and he went and saw Terminator in an early screening and said, "You'll never be better than Terminator," and so he turned it down. That's my fun fact for RoboCop.
Now, to be fair, there's one good RoboCop movie.
That's true.
And there's like seven RoboCop movies.
Yeah, so, but really, there's
the
only
TV series.
There's only two good Terminators, so.
And there are five and a TV show?
The TV show is actually pretty good. Right.
I'll take your word for it because I didn't.
I know there was three, maybe fourth RoboCop movie.
So there were several
straight to video.
There were several straight to video ones. There was a subtitle for it. It was like RoboCop something, and then they all had their sequel name. I can't remember what it was. They were pretty bad.
And it seemed like some of those straight to video were movies from the series, even.
I never saw the series.
The series wasn't exactly the movies. Mm. RoboCop. You know, like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that was too long ago.
I didn't watch them that much. The series, the first movie was brilliant.
Yeah.
Great. A little gross. But
it is ramped up the gore on that one.
Yes. It's
true. Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great movie.
That's an 80s movie.
Yes, fun fact, there's actually...
the three of them.
There's actually a thank you to DC Comics at the very end credits because there's a very, very famous DC character named the Karate Kid. And they use the name.
Superheroes.
Yeah. Not really that famous, to be honest.
He's
with you,
super... Right? He's a founding member of...
But a great movie.
The Justice Babies.
Mr. Miyagi is a classic character. Daniel-san, the crane kick. Very kind of cheesy now looking back on it, but it still holds up and I think is still a fun movie. And the sequels, or at least one of the sequels, was not terrible. I mean, not as bad as everybody says.
I really loved the Hilary Swank movie, the first one. It's not a good movie, but...
It's better than the Jaden Smith one.
I was a little girl watching this chick kick ass in a prom dress at the very end.
Oh,
with
God.
Her, like...
I forgot about that. I'm having flashbacks.
So I've only ever seen the first one.
It's okay. That's okay.
And I like the first one.
Yeah. Don't ruin it for yourself. All the sequels aren't that bad.
In my head, it's a 90s film. Like, just...
No, that's definitely
an
80s
so
film.
Old. Oh, my God.
Hilary Swank's, I think, is 90s.
Yes.
That one's 90s.
Late 90s, I think. Like, 96 or 97, wasn't it?
No, it was before Million Dollar Baby.
Oh.
Yeah.
I had Batman on there. I don't know if that was on the list. Fun fact about Batman, his ears were originally too tall for the Batmobile and they had to sculpt a new cowl to get him shorter ears, which is funny because he has the longest ears of any Batman movie in that movie.
Never mind. Go ahead.
The last one I had was Ghostbusters 2. I think taken on its own, it's really a decent 80s movie. I think that when you compare it to the first one is when it starts to have major issues.
I mean, that's fair.
My fun fact about that one is because of the success of the real Ghostbusters cartoon, they had to really tone down the adult innuendo and behaviors of the Ghostbusters. Also, it's why you notice that the Ghostbusters quit smoking in between the two movies, and Slimer was living in the firehouse in the second movie, and then Janine was completely a different character. It's all because of the cartoon that came out.
But also PG-13 became a thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
And so they had to be careful not to get the 13 rating, too, which I think smoking would have gotten them.
Yeah, probably.
So,
but that was the reason for all of the changes. But yes, you fight me on it, but I think that's a decent 80s movie taken on its own if you don't compare it to the first movie.
I have the same opinion about Wayne's World 2. Not great when you compare it to the first one, but it holds up as a really good 90s film. So,
not saying Ghostbusters 2 was horrible, but it just meh.
Watch it.
I think it's better than Matt. If you're not comparing it to the first one, really, I am a Ghostbusters fan, admittedly. But I think even taken out, as a kid, I remember the second one way more than I remember the first one, and maybe that's why it's better to me. But
I like a lot of the second one. The slime was the thing that I didn't really care for, like the
mood slime.
Yeah,
which
like
is the major.
Yeah, that's
part
the major
of the
plot.
Movie.
But
like that Viggo was frightening.
Yeah, Viggo was
scary.
But I like that, though. Like, that was the thing, like, the main villain. Like, I liked him. Mm-hmm. I liked the chemistry
and
between
all the
characters.
And when he possessed Ray? I mean, come on, that was creepy.
Like, I like a lot of that. It was just the slime, I thought, was just kind of
She didn't like the slime blower?
No.
Oh, that was a cool piece of Ghostbusters tech.
I love this scene where they're dancing. Around
Well, it's because they don't want to wear an 80-pound thing on their back.
I do feel like that's where Nickelodeon got all of their ideas
probably.
For slime.
Well, between the first one and the second one, yeah, they're probably a good influence there.
Just saying.
All right, Derek, you're the last one for the lightning round.
All right, so I'll go quickly because I have a pretty long list. Mine are in chronological order. Airplane, which is one of my favorite comedies of all time.
One of the very first parody films. Like.
With Leslie Nielsen, who before Airplane was a serious actor, for those who didn't know.
His second career.
Poltergeist, which is definitely one of my top horror movies of all time. Great practical effects in the original Poltergeist. Don't go see the sequels. especially the third one. Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, I think it still actually holds up really well, though it is slow and kind of boring. I get that. Don't get me wrong.
One for me.
But I do love the practical effects, the buildings, this kind of futuristic...
Sure, the world building was incredible in that movie, yeah, but I'm kind of in the same camp as you, where it was really long and just not that interesting.
I do think the book is wonderful, though. It's just really short. If you've never read it, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But it's really good. The Thing, the original.
Oh, I had that on my list, too. I forgot to mention it.
Which is just phenomenal. I love that movie. The newer movie of the same name is a prequel, by the way, not a remake. So make sure you watch the original one first. Otherwise, the prequel kind of spoils everything for you.
Fun fact about that movie. Kurt Russell actually threw a stick of dynamite in the scene towards the end of the film. And he didn't realize how big of an explosion it was going to be. And he actually got blown off his feet by the dynamite explosion.
Oh, that's cool.
That's just something they wouldn't do today, obviously.
That's awesome.
I did not know that. Kurt Russell
and that's the cut they used, also.
He just stepped on set, and he was like, I was a Disney kid, I'm going to throw dynamite.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. And then I also had Platoon, which, awesome. You know, big war movie, of course, right?
Academy Award winner.
And Rain Man, which was another, you know, big successful film. And then, of course, I can't go away without mentioning that there were some Star Trek movies, specifically The Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan, so, which brought the franchise back to life.
From the dead.
But, after the motion picture.
Or from the nap that everybody was taking from.
Exactly. And because of its success, we got The Next Generation and beyond.
Yeah. So those are my. There's tons of other stuff that we could have probably discussed and put on our list.
There are some things that we personally omitted because we have a cult episode coming up. So things like Clue were left off and Big Trouble in Little China, not because we don't love them, but because we are talking about them next week. So you know,
and there are a tremendous number of iconic 80s movies
that are cult.
You touched The Karate Kid, you have the Lethal Weapon series, the Beverly Hills Cop series. Mm-hmm.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I mean, we didn't talk about Rocky. I left that out because the franchise really started in the 70s. You know, we left out the big stuff like Aliens, Terminator.
But I think the original Alien was 79. So.
Yeah.
Also true. But, I mean, the franchise
But it's
changed.
Not like an 80s movie. See, that's one of those things.
It's tough, right?
Yeah.
You know, to kind of know where to draw the line. And we talk, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, of course. You know, the Indiana Jones films, you know, were in the 80s. Well, the good ones. so, you know, but we talk about a lot of those things on other shows and other topics. So
again, profoundly influential on all of us, and without those films we wouldn't be doing this
absolutely
show from our basement.
That's right. But I think that's probably going to be it for us tonight.
Went long.
Great episode.
Eric, if people want to reach out and find you or the Red Dalek, how can they do that?
You can. On Facebook. It's just Eric Collins. But Red Dalek is also on Facebook. Red Dalek, and we're in Prairie Village, so you can find it through that. Because there's a lot of Red Daleks now.
There you go. Are you guys going to be at Planet Comic-Con?
We will be at Planet on there. Not sure Red's going to bother.
Okay.
With it, but maybe.
All right.
On there, it's been a big hassle the last couple of years.
I believe it.
With security, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, that's a shame. Okay, I mean, lugging it around, I can understand.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, you know, we need basically wheelchair access. And they were cutting off a lot of the elevators, for example. Last year and the year before, and especially by Sunday, the security guards get very snippy. in that. So, but otherwise, fair enough. It's a great show.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
So we will be there, of course. Ryan with Buster Props will have a booth selling props and things and cowls and 3D printed and all that good stuff.
All kinds of new stuff, definitely. John has been working very hard. I've been mostly working hard on filling current orders, but he's been working on new stuff, so definitely come check it out.
And Ray will be a Siren Ray cosplay. You will have a booth there as well.
I think so.
Show up and find out. We'll see.
And I will be around. We have three panels at Planet Comic Con the weekend of February 15th.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. One each day.
Yes, one each day. Friday night will be Screen Heroes. We're ranking the live-action Star Wars films. On Saturday will be Red Shirts and Runabouts. We'll be wrapping up Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. And on Sunday will be Costume Couture with the LGBT Plus and Cosplay panel. So that will be that. At Buster Props, at Siren Ray, I'm the Star Trek dude. You can find us at Heroes Podcasts and heroespodcasts.com. Don't forget to join us live on Tuesday nights at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central to chat with us. Several people chatted with us tonight, so thank you, all of you, for doing that. We'll catch you guys next week.
Woo! Bye, guys.